Welcome, everyone, to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. An ever-growing number of people believe that the Earth's history has been influenced by celestial beings. They've been here in the past, they're here now, and they're going to be here in the future. That's what this program is dedicated to, that premise. In my opinion, there's one gentleman on planet Earth who knows a heck of a lot about this, and that is our guest of the honor every program. It's Michael in Maui. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
And we're glad to hear of your wife's speedy recovery.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, she's coming along just fine. And thanks for the concern and just being nice about it. Yeah, really good.
Now, last week, I think in place of, since you were off last week, I think we played an old Riley Martin show.
Yeah.
I think it was, I think it's laying here on the CD. Yeah, it was. It was from May of 07. And boy, the topics of conversation was all about 2012.
Oh.
Well, here we are.
Yes, we are.
You know, and some of the stuff Riley was talking about back then, maybe they're coming to pass. I don't know. But anyway, I don't know why I mentioned that at all. But so where are we starting? You've been off for a week or so back, and you know, we didn't get a chance to talk too much off air before we started tonight. Any exciting news or revelations or insights you've had in the last couple of weeks?
Well, nothing is, you know, very special in terms of, you know, coming to me in terms of a form of a vision, something that the Celestials wanted me to touch on. There's a little bit of in concept, what they've been kind of addressing, you know, telling me to let people understand and know, is that, you know, one of the things is that if the Celestials have been working with us and have such a benevolent composure toward us, how come we don't live in a perfect world? And that's probably one of the things that, you know, one of the complaints I had before them was, you know, don't blame me for the world being such a terrible place, because, you know, and besides that, what could I do about it? And they had this real concern because of what actually propagated through time from a very, you know, rebellious, fallen race of celestial beings who have left some evidences on our planet, you know, different ancient ruins and even some types of skeletal remains, because they did use physical body types that was very close to human. In fact, some of them were capable of interbreeding with the human race and had not only messed with our genetics in that, but also with our direction in terms of the development of our planet in a more peaceful way, one in which would still allow for different expressions, but not so much the kind of things that go on. An example would be perhaps looking at the freedom that, let's say, the banking system had in terms of creating different types of derived instruments for investments. But because the banking system really doesn't have a heart that is attuned to the divine instruction set, you might say, the divine plan, you see things go awry. You know, you see things, you see great human weakness move in because That's not part of what makes, the heartless corporations run, which are basically a form of man's own idea to give a non-human entity human rights. And these kinds of concepts were allowed for propagated under Lucifer's design, and basically just go for it and don't worry about the consequences that would come about. And we are as an example, suffering under the consequence of this economic retreat, which may be looking toward an additional dip, perhaps not this year, but in the year after. We're looking at one that's maybe around that time, around the December time frame of this year. But in any case, that's one example in which governments or governances or even how you develop apply the technique to the development of civilization, which would be a financial instrument. And this is one of the key things that was sent to me, was this vision, that just wide awake vision, just playing right in front of me, which is of that cylinder, or one that looks like you're looking down into an oil tank, and it was carved into sandstone. And it was a story about all of civilization and industry, modern times, and how it was directly linked to oil and industry in present time, and energy, and money. And of course, we know about the concept of the oil dollars, basically created in the early 70s, which would be the instrument that is falling apart right now. But just before, in my meditation, slightly before this broadcast started, I was given a picture of a heap of coal, of all things, coal, just piled up high, and resources continually being, used up and then replaced. So apparently, to the celestials, coal is a worthy replacement for our poorly designed nuclear power plants. So I'm not sure where Japan's going, but coal may be someplace countries may be looking into.
Interesting.
And something that apparently, even with the concept of the carbon footprint idea, because of our modern technologies in terms of scrubbing the gases or the burnt fuel of burnt coal, would allow it to continue to be a viable production of energy for our planet in the near term.
Well, there's a lot of it, especially
around
here,
folks.
Yeah,
there's a tremendous amount of it, and it's just, because of the desire for absolutely cheap energy, but then actually turning away our back on it because of nuclear energy, is really a change that the planet is going to have to turn to something. And apparently, it wasn't showing me pools of oil. They were showing me heaps of coal, already mined and just continually being restored, and apparently saying we got lots until the transition time when we start using other forms of energy and even nuclear energy in a more safer fashion, much safer fashion.
Well, while all of us consumers are interested in cheap energy, none of the energy producers are interested in cheap energy of any kind. They can't make money off cheap energy. They need oil, for instance, to stay over $100, $130, $140 a barrel. I've heard estimates that it costs them about $15 a barrel to pump it, and they want to sell it to you 10 times its value. That's good for them. They smile when they sell oil at $150 a barrel. So there's a lot of very powerful people who don't ever want there to be cheap energy. They want it to be as expensive as possible.
Well, yes. And what they're directly, these energy moguls are tied in, again, to the world currency presently. They see it being eroded. They see the fact that China and Russia are outside of their dollar trading scheme. And also other producers in the Middle East. I think Iran is still out of the loop. Of course, Libya used to be. I don't know what's happened to it since. And of course, another one that used to be outside of the dollar trading loop for energy, specifically oil, was Iraq. So when we look at this problem, which was shown to me by the Celestials as an important point of turning. It showed me this, you know, continual factories from ancient times, and from the times of Egypt continuing on. Actually, it was before that time, because the design of the concept of money or currency was used in the time of Babel, the time before that, the times of much earlier small-spotted civilizations throughout the world. You know, we see only certain remnants of them. And they essentially were operating under fiat, too. But they fell apart eventually. But then something always comes up to replace them. But in the case that we're looking at right now, in this year, we see that this is a major point in terms of our civilization, and it's something that they're kind of pointing me to realize. And one of the things that they also pointed out to me is that there are biblical indications that talked about certain things concerning the age of the Gentiles coming to a certain maturity. The Gentiles, the rest of the world. Actually, when you looked at the Hebrew or the Jewish doctrines or teachings, the Gentiles were just about everybody else. But the age of the Gentiles is really the maturing of our planet in terms of our civilization and taking being ready for the next step. Because although we could have attained this much earlier, we did not because of the infighting and the premature holding on to power and wealth by certain individuals. And this group has not grown very much larger through the decades and through the centuries and through the millenniums of time, but have pretty much remained small. But that is a factor in which we'll be turning over, because in order to take the next step, rely on the fact that our consciousness, our mentality in terms of what is more important, cheap energy, let's say, or the danger of nuclear failure. So we see that there's more and more regular people out there just saying, forget the cheap energy, let's go and find a clean way to turn our turbines with cleaner burning coal until we find other factors that are better in sources such as hydrogen and different ways in which to get such a powerful fuel as hydrogen at close to its usage point, a point of use versus having to store it. Well, in any case, there is this growing consciousness that has moved around our planet, which is all part of the reforming of our planet. So I believe we are moving somewhat under their plan. However, as I said, there's a lot of legacy that has been laid many millenniums ago. And planet, one of the most shocking things I was made aware of was the concept of of Satan and Lucifer as being right here on Earth, as we are the fallen ones. So we came from the influence under their fallen governance. So we are actually on a healing mode from their clutches, you might say. And of course, there's evidences that many other we're quite resilient if we just catch on to the right theme of things. And that theme of things, of course, would be to have a more egregious society that has concern for the everyday person and bringing them up to level in sharing of our resources and making them available throughout the planet. And this has to become more and more feasible, and it's really taking hold right now, much more than at one time. Even the big companies, especially big companies, realize that too. Short-term profits are not feasible for long-term companies. You know,
many times. Well, unless you're Bain Capital, what? The corporate raiders. Wasn't that the strategy? I'm not talking politics, but wasn't that the strategy back in the 80s? You go in and you buy a company and then you sell off its parts because the parts are more valuable than the whole, and you make your money quick and you dash.
Yeah, and many of those that were doing that type of corporate raiding thought they were doing our industries a favor. They felt that big fat companies should be made mean and lean, and therefore more creative and more, look, you cut off their hands, and what are you left with? Again, more uselessness. So that's basically what happened, and a lot of our hands went offshore, and it didn't benefit us. It benefited foreign companies and things like that. Or foreign arrangements, same company, just foreign arrangements in terms of whose hands they use.
Well, with the ever-increasing population of the Earth, with the ever-increasing cost of energy, you know, it can't go on like this forever. There has to be a breaking point somewhere when it just costs too much to move around. And it costs too much to get that cheap food to market. Or, you know, the artificially created energy crises, like I'm thinking of Enron, for example. All you people in California listening, remember those rolling blackouts? There was plenty of electricity. It was greedy people. Ken Lay and the boys were just insanely greedy, and they fooled us all and got rich doing it. And you know, if you think the corporate mind has changed, well, the CBS News that ran before our broadcast tonight, Michael, I know you didn't hear it, but it's Obama talking about, you know, why can't we put some curbs on these speculators, the guys in the commodities market? You know, you can put, some people say it, maybe it's $1.50, maybe it's 90 cents a gallon is all going in the pockets of the speculators because they got enough money to buy up enough of it to keep the prices high. I don't know. I think it's not really conspiracy corner. I think it's facts. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's definitely fact, because of course these big oil oligopolies are energy oligopolies are, you know, playing with as many instruments as they can, besides using speculators, using the political influences and passing certain kinds of legislations in their favor, and then looking at the other way for some of their, you know, dipping into their profits, as well as having a certain kind of collusions. Actually, when they work on oil pricing, it's amazing how they have been able, in this oil dollar kind of environment, to be able to predictably move prices in the direction that they want them to go. If they want them to go down cheaper so people start using it again, they drop the prices. So all of a sudden, I remember the days of the real oil shortage. It wasn't a real oil shortage. it's the first time I remember hearing about we had more oil. It was just hidden, and those back then in the I think it was the late 70s, something like that, the oil gas lines and stuff like that. And I had a big old GTO that, you know, swallowed a lot of fuel, and I had another little motorcycle. So I would go and I'd fill the tank up and siphon out a gallon or half gallon or so every once in a while, so I wouldn't have to make the run around to the to those long gas lines. And I said, I'm not about getting another fuel hog again. And then sure enough, as the prices started to drop, these supercars started to come back in style again. And got gas hogs. So it's all part of the way they strategize and play the game for being able to manipulate their pricing and have a very sophisticated way in which they can accomplish that. And much of it is still, you know, known, but some of it, of course, is not known in exactly who is playing and how they got the web of connectivity, you know, between associations of individuals as well as companies, you know, not necessarily price fixing, but price setting and hitting their targets. So in any case right now, I'm seeing as far as Celestial's looking at our position, we're pretty much following on target as for being ready for type of a change for the better. But it requires, any time there's change, there's going to be tremendous amount of complaint. It's not going to be easy because there are so many who want things to stay the same.
Yeah, that's right. If you're wealthy and powerful, your rule number one is stay wealthy and powerful. I don't know. It sounds a little facetious, but I don't know. Since I'm not wealthy or powerful, maybe my views would change if I was. I don't know. Something I probably don't have to worry about. Well, while we're on the topic of energy, when I hear, well, there hasn't been an oil refinery built in the United States in 20 years, why not? Why not? Oh, that's right, because if there's a limited number of refineries, and oh, that's right, you got to shut them down every once in a while, like the three refineries in the U.S. that are closed now, so we can't process as much oil, sorry. So it's just reeks to high heaven, you know, what they're doing here, and it's so blatantly obvious, and I don't know. I think in reward we should give them another $3 billion in tax credits this year. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're playing two sides of the fence, too, in that case, which is that it's all working for their own good. But, you know, when it comes down to these kinds of barons that run the planet, they run at least a lot of the currency flow around, they realize they have a certain kind of level of responsibility, a responsibility for the good, not only of their corporation that they run, but actually the planet. And there's more and more in concept turning to this. One of the things that was placed into our environment, into our planetary wealth, and this is something that not all celestial beings possess, is that divine fractal, this thought adjuster that comes into the lives of individuals who make at a very early age, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, around there, ideas of what is right and wrong and desire to know right and wrong. And this, their techniques that people have been training, using in society to create disassociated people who do not function by this higher level of divine influence, the thought adjuster. The thought adjuster is pressure, the thought adjuster is adjusting of motives. And this one thing that has been placed was one person was wondering how could people, whether it be Hitler's regime or Pol Pot or whatever, we have this man's inhumanity to man. How could people disregard such a blatant, blatantly wrong thing? And one of the things about a juster relationship, which some of these powers that be have found ways in which to almost render the adjuster impotent in terms of their relationship to adjust a person's motive and their actual deed. And that is to relegate many of their deeds to subhuman classes of people. In other words, to create an entire culture and the mentality of people who are not human. In other words, let's say the Jews. They were not human in terms of the Nazis who did tremendous evil to them. And then being not human, they could treat them as animals. And they had to come to that convinced mindset. So these powers that be who look around the world, one of the things is that they look upon the masses of people around the world and concern some as useless eaters. This concept of useless eaters is subhuman. And by relegating to this animal position, the divinity cannot speak to them because they have actually conditioned a way of lying to the thought adjuster. And they have actually been very well equipped in terms of deceiving their own selves, lying to themselves, and as a result, not being able to be guided by the higher level of governance, the real, true governance that governs the universe of the faithful ones, and even the fallen ones who have were relegated at one time to a broken governance from the central governance that came from the first source, from God. Many of them have turned around back into resonance and realized that that point of disengagement was a lie, and there was a proper time and a proper place for things. And this is something that still has its position in our planet, which makes the turning of the age ever so difficult, because there's a bunch of people who lie to themselves and continually lie to themselves about what is ultimately good. And making that type of divine governance difficult sometimes, much more difficult than if it wasn't so.
Well, here we are, probably at the end of an age, for whatever that means.
Yes.
But we are, here it is, 2012. And as a historian, I look back over the last century, you know, 1900 up to 2000. And thinking back of much history as I know, and I'm no complete expert, but I think you can make a good argument that the worst century of all time for human displays of barbarism, death, suffering, profound sadness, we created more of that in last century than any century previous to that. I think the numbers stack up. I think we killed more people in war. We let more people die from problems that happen from war. I mean, you take Pol Pot and Stalin and Hitler and things like Darfur. Millions of people. Tens of millions. Hundreds of millions of people. What other century in our recorded history were we as lousy human beings as we were last century? And here we are at the end of the age. You know, it's sort of like we're the worst behaved generations. We're the last three of all human history. I don't know. Were the Romans any worse? I don't know. They pretty bad people there, too. But I don't know. Is that a cockamamie observation?
No, it's not. It's actually quite accurate. And the reason for that, again, was if you look back at all of these types of leaders and people who actually carried out such atrocious acts, abominable acts. And they were called basically abominations because they were working work of absolute lies. And there'd be no truth in them. Yet when approached, many of these people are able to, admit with almost like, yes, so what? I did order that to happen, and so many, yes, they all did die. So what? Because they're so convinced of the fact that they did no wrong because they were not human, and they still convince themselves of that. And it's like, I think when it comes right down to it, many times the animal rights people have more power in convincing people about the rights of animals than the rights of human beings. But these things are a supreme example of being able to be deceived and having this strong delusion come over leaders creates extremely strong ill acts because of these delusions.
Now, one would think that if we were being educated as a species, that by the time you get to your senior year, you're a little better behaved than the kids in kindergarten. And we seem to be completely upside down as a race. We found more efficient and exciting ways to kill each other by the millions. With chemical, anyway, it just seems kind of odd that if the Celestials are going to reveal themselves and we're going to change it. Well, like I say, thank goodness, it's about time. If we have a century this century worse than last century, it's going to be miserable.
If this century is worse than the last century, given the amount of different kinds of ways we've developed to kill ourselves, and the way in which we've created the idea of the soldier without a conscience, that has hit our virtual gaming youth who have become pulling virtual, what appears to be a virtual battlefield to them in terms of what they're used to is actually killing real people and doing some pretty awful things. Because of that disconnect, the techniques that are used by the powers that be to overrule our humanity, our higher human divinity, actually we're the only species on the planet that has any touch to divinity, yet to cut off that divine bit of us through virtual type disconnected actions has allowed for some more awful types of what would be considered a more pinpoint type of military action. And when the arrows do come and do fly, they look pretty awful. And in any case, that is another approach that has been used and has been used successfully. And that's where we've come to a point, and there's an old biblical saying, woe to the man who call it evil good, and in other words, lies to the adjuster. And successfully lying to the adjuster actually numbs one to the voice of the adjuster, which works under pressure of motive and discomfort. And when the discomfort is removed, then more and more evil can be pursued. The adjuster will continue complaint in the individual, and there is always that way in which individual can wake up. And the first point, of course, is realizing that we are not highly developed animals. We are actually animals with divinity installed, and all it requires is to hook up to divinity, to install divinity fragment, and attune oneself to that, which creates a whole new level of understanding of the purpose of life and our ascent to even higher realms of life and light.
Well, folks, if you'd like to send a question or a comment to any of our shows, you can zap them in anytime. You can hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. Try to put Project Your Answer question in the subject line, because we get bunches of emails. There's a great question that's come in from a longtime listener, Tony. Actually, there's a couple here, Michael. If you're ready, I'll throw a couple at you.
Okay.
Dear Michael, today's science estimates that the age of the universe is a bit less than 14 billion years. The Urantia book talks about the age of the nebula of our solar system came from being nearly a trillion years old, so nearly 1,000 times older than the current science says the universe is. Have the celestials ever said how old the universe is?
The celestials have a position in terms of understanding time that is different, because some of them, the higher ones, believe those that I've met who are classified as beings of light, were not essentially hooked up to time and space. Time and space, as we understand it, seems to be able to be discerned. Time in terms of progression, a linear progression. Space in terms of a coordinate location, one in which we coordinate vectors and locations. And we try to relegate all reality within that domain. However, when it comes down to the celestial's mapping of time and space, they can use our time domain in terms of our actual clocking of seconds and hours and minutes and days and years, or they can use one in which uses ages and periods, or one that are without measure. When we look at time in terms of being immeasurable, we find out that it never ends. If we were to look at the difference between their position in terms of what is the difference between 1 billion and 1 trillion, but in our estimation, it ends up being nothing more than additional zeros added to a number, because we don't live within the domain of that time. Much shorter spans of time are real to us. In terms of their definition, trying to give ages that we cannot really understand in terms of their understanding may end up with some incoherences. We may not agree. But ultimately, we should try to agree with the duration as being extremely long, nearly infinite, but definitely finite, measurable. Some of those that I were with, these were specifically Vorondadek Most High observers, were in existence before our galaxy was coming into its nebulous stage. The Vorondadeks were before that nebulous stage as beings of light and creation. Their term of both dwelling within our time domain and dwelling within a timeless domain is actually quite the same, because in the timeless domain, what is in the front, in the future, and what is in the back, what is in the present, is all the same. For us, we can discriminate between the past, present, and the future, having the present only as the deciding factor in helping shape a future. So we live in a very dynamic position, and perhaps understanding the age of the galaxy, all we need to understand is that we, the Urantia book, in its terms of durations of time, come to some pretty specific ideals of time. But in terms of our own understanding compared to what the Urantia book may say, we need to synthesize it down to, damn, it's a long time. And it's we can agree upon the process. And that is probably one in which having a timeless type of individual try to explain extremely long periods of time would tend to try to relegate it to something that is perhaps in our ideal of relegating time, extremely long. But in any case, I do believe that there's small errors sometimes in terms of our coming together in what the Urantia book proposes and what is our most recent discoveries or estimates. Because one of the things that they understand is that although we live within a time domain, time in terms of our measure and its stable, more stable measure are not necessarily keyed the same. And this has a lot to do with expansion and a lot to do with the expansion of the universe and how, and with that expansion, time fluctuates.
Well, I like the evolution of physics now and the merging of the ideas of space and time, and now the catchphrase is space-time. And you know, they're inseparable. You cannot have one without the other. If you have no space, you know, and I don't know, my little brain sort of kind of goes with that idea. You know, if the universe is of infinite size, there's the space, then it has to have infinite time, right? And you can't move without, you can't move through space without time. You can't, there has to be a before and there's an after. I don't know. It seems like just a hyphenated word now, but it somehow just clarifies that a little better in my little brain.
Yeah, well, we try to package these ideas that can be quite difficult to conceive of, in if we're not packaging them together, because we can measure time through space. How long does it take? You know, I throw a baseball. How long does it take me to go from pitching the baseball to the catcher catching it? Well, and then from there we can figure out how fast the ball went. So this is all part of the time-space domain, but it's very time-space. There are different kinds of space. I could get into measures of domains and spaceless domains and time domains, which make possible our present communication technologies. And it's crazy. It's wonderful, though, how we've been able to manipulate and use time domains and time domain divisions and, you know, different types of space domain divisions.
Well, get ready for some big numbers here. Tony has a follow-up question that reads, current science says there are about 300 sextillion, that is 300 trillion trillion stars, in the known universe. According to the Urantia book, only a tiny fraction of these stars are inhabited, i.e. those in the seven super universes, as they're called, which is basically a few of the nearby galaxies from the trillion or so we know about. Is this really true? Why wouldn't life be spread throughout the vast universe that we live in?
Yes, because of one of the interesting things about that we're discovering is that the fact that the universe is continually expanding, and that in the outermost discoveries we discover things like the galaxy nurseries, where there's nebulas just seem to be popping into a beautiful picture too that the Hubble Space Telescope did find in one of the blackest regions, and we find out they're being birthed into reality. And that this process is continually expanding. And one of the interesting things is that space, as is understood by the Urantia book, is infinite. It does not have a measure which could say it can be measured to its limits. And as a result, its expansion is continuous, and its numbers of galaxies continue to be expansive. Yet the propagated, when you look at the created universes, every single universe that was created is created around a fixed field, perhaps, of stars that became, you might say, within our supposed Goldilocks zone, a little bit more, a little bit less than that Goldilocks zone, to have life propagated into it. And this is what the Urantia book looks at, the propagation of life into these domains. And yet it also acknowledges the outer spaces, outer space levels. And there's also in its understanding that there are outer spacers, essentially those who are not necessarily coming from the known organized universe of governance. In other words, they're free agents out in the woods, out in the boondocks. And this has been acknowledged, and the term used was outer spacer. And it sort of does, but it also gives an idea that if outer spacers are encountered by them, they tend to also follow similar lines of reality. So they are able to develop a line of communication with them. And this is something that is interesting, because it does say that there is a certain reality thread that threads the entire universe, both our local as well as super universe and super universes, and the continual growing number of local universes. So that's an amazing thing, that it does address it, but not necessarily in specific numbers, but also does consider the outer spaces.
Well, folks, we live in some interesting times here, and I know I try to, I think everybody does, tries to take in the latest information from, the quantum physics world and, Stephen Hawking and the boys, and try to somehow rationalize our universe. Yet, I wonder, are we still so crude in our understanding? Are we still so, obviously, there's so much more that we don't know than we do know. I think that kind of rubs me the wrong way when people like Stephen Hawking say, well, we got it all figured out. Turn off the lights. Everybody can go home. You don't know anything. I think a vast majority of the knowledge that is to be learned has not yet been learned, Mr. Hawking. I hope you can hang around to find out. But one piece of knowledge that people wish they knew is, we only have a couple minutes left, but what are your thoughts now as we approach even closer? We're even closer than we were a minute ago to December 21st, 2012. Any feelings on what's going to happen that day, if anything?
As far as that day, I don't have anything specific in terms of what's going to happen, because I do see the turning of the page. You might see the age is like a page, and it, you just don't, it's not like our, more like a book. So you do see the turning of the page. So as far as that day, the page won't turn exactly on that day. It's actually been started quite a ways earlier, and will complete itself. But that particular date was chosen. So it ends, I believe, given what my role is, the date in which our planet has this hands-off policy, don't monkey with planet Earth yet, until so-and-so time. It could be representative in that time. But it would only be preceded or be shown to be one in which there'd be more activity, perhaps, in UFO activity sites, and not necessarily. I do not believe there would be a open arrangement between governances yet. This is something that will take some time because of our planetary psyche, you know. So I don't see that day as the day when all the ships will land and say, here we are. But it may mean that there will be a lot more ships visible. Well, it may mean that there will be a lot more realizing that, hey, we're really not alone. Look at all this stuff that's happening in terms of spotting all of this stuff, and it's all coming out now, you know. It could very well be that day when it overspills, all the reality of our celestial brothers will start overflowing the dikes and coming into our reality.
And some will try to say it's swamp gas.
Absolutely, but it will become extremely difficult, and that's exactly what they plan to do. But they can't look like an invasion force.
Well, only Americans are stupid enough to believe an explanation. Yeah, I saw a craft. Yeah, I saw beings. Yep, it was swamp gas. What? Okay, well, that's for make up your own mind, people. Look and, you know, blink your eyes a few times. You don't just accept everything that you hear, even, you know, from us either. You know, you got a brain, use it. Well, Michael, we're down to our last couple of minutes. I always want to make mention on this broadcast a couple things. First of all, Michael is also heard on Hello Earth with Curtis Cooperman. And give me that address again, helloearth.net, is that it?
.info.
Sorry, guys. I'll learn that sooner or later. And he's heard on Broadcast Urantia, which is broadcasturantia.com. Am I leaving any other ones out?
Yeah, well, if you go to helloearth.info, you'll go find the Michael Connection page, and you get more information there. Also give some interesting pictures and stuff about the actual architectural sphere. And it's pictures taken by Cassini, as well as some Earth-based telescopes.
We got to check that out.
I didn't show it there.
I got to go check that out. Yeah, I've only seen the one picture that was on Curtis's site. The illuminated anomaly. I'm sorry?
You got to scan down the Michael Connection page and see all kinds of funny stuff.
Yeah, funny's that's the right word, because, you know, the only illuminated, well, anyway, I was going to say, the sun is bright, and that thing out there by the rings of Saturn. What's making that light, everybody? Go figure that one out. Okay, well, we think we know. And the other thing I want to mention on every broadcast is that Michael does this program. He has nothing to sell. He does not get paid. We don't pay him. I don't know if somebody else is paying you, but we're not. You do this because you told your alien friends that you would help spread the message, and you're keeping your word. And just that alone is commendable. But on behalf of all of our listeners, we sincerely thank you for the time that you devote with us on this program, Michael.
Well, you're certainly welcome. It really fulfills their plan of getting the information out. And, of course, as many of you as want more, ask more questions, and you'll get as clear of an answer as I can possibly give.
It's the real deal. I want somebody that's following Riley Martin to let me know. Remember, he was going to give a prediction on a certain date of something. And I've forgotten the specifics, but I believe that time has come and gone now. So has Riley made any rock-solid date predictions like I thought at one time he said he was going to do? Maybe that's happened, maybe not. But listeners, let me know. Hit me up at dj@artistfirst.com. Michael, we're out of time. Give a big kiss and speedy recovery to your wife, and we'll catch you next week.
Okay, thank you and aloha.